This is Pure Decking for Saturday, March the 14th, 2015. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like our current police state, information security, and being welcomed into the machine. I'm Morps. Tonight I am drinking Dragon's Milk, because I finally found someplace locally I can pick it up. Tonight, Brain Fart. Fox, what are you drinking?
Just opening up some Johnny Walker Red.
Excellent. Yeah, I just polished off a bottle of that a couple of days ago. Madman, what are you drinking?
Wells Banana Bread Beer.
What the hell is wrong with you?
I wanted banana bread and I wanted beer. And I could either buy banana bread and beer, or I could buy banana bread beer. And if I wanted banana bread, I'd have to make an additional stop. So I grabbed the beer version.
Well, beer is just liquid bread.
And this is liquid bread made with bananas.
What are you barbecuing?
I'm drinking irradiated tap water with female hormones in it.
Wait a minute. Not concerned about
side effects. Just like mom used to make.
Oh, if that's how your mother cooked, man. That's So, I haven't really gotten, this past couple of weeks have just been insane, so I haven't really had time to work on the beta site or anything like that. I'm hoping to take it live soon. I've just got to figure out what I want to do with all the content from the old site, figure out the best way to handle that, because the goal is to shut down and remove WordPress. I don't want to just lock it up. I want to actually get rid of it, because I feel like it's a security risk. So, I've got some ideas on that. Unfortunately, all of them are like, you know, work. So, until I figure that out, we'll leave the primary site up, and that, or I'll swap them over and make a old .galaxy 15 or something. I think that's what we talked about doing. Anyways, so the moment this dropped, RU was going nuts messaging me. The FCC has finally published their open internet rules. 400 pages that read like somebody's shit list.
Yeah, you know, it's up there with 50 Shades of Grey boring.
Yeah, I mean, the majority of the ruling of the document is opinion and references to other laws, and it seems like the even more than that is all just justification for the ruling.
Yeah,
and
I think a lot of it there is. Comcast are responsible for fucking this up, so we need to imply this law.
Yeah. So, I'm kind of hoping EFF or somebody does a really good detailed analysis of it. I actually found a CNET analysis of it, but it's CNET. It's so I'm not quite sure how accurate it is. So I got some parts I picked out of their analysis for us to talk about. I did have one big section I wanted to call out and talk about, which we talked about the other day already, but, you know, hey, we'll go over it again. So, I don't know, before we get too far into this, it really does read like somebody's shit list, doesn't it? It's like, oh, you fucked up this, so we're enacting this rule, and you fucked up that, we're enacting that rule. But the part of it that throws me is they're kind of picking and choosing parts out of Title II to enforce. And my understanding was they couldn't do that, that they had to kind of enforce all or nothing, didn't they?
They couldn't really call it Title II, but it kind of goes back to their enabling statute. Does their enabling statute allow them to write new regulation involving the internet, or do they have to go to Congress for permission?
I'm under the understanding they would have to go to Congress for permission, Because whereas some updates they've made to the telecommunications acts to that create the FCC and empower it, I mean, they've acknowledged cable and they may have acknowledged internet in the update they did in the 90s. But, I mean, yeah, this is back when AT&T DSL still counted as broadband. So
you also look at whenever they did those updates to internet, did Congress go back and give them the power to do it, or did they just do it and no one has challenged them on it?
I think right now they've just done it and nobody's challenged them on it. Of course, that's going to change. But, I mean, Ari, you probably spent more time on this than anybody else looking over that document. Other than a headache and a nosebleed, what'd you get from it?
Nothing, man. I'm not a lawyer.
Yeah.
And once again, the document, fucking, it's not that confusing to read, but there needs to, you need at least six supplementary texts to go with it of other rulings. And it is a big blame game. The FCC just pretty much pointing out to every telecommunication company where they've gone wrong in the last 10 years of internet regulation and shaming them in the document. It is 400 pages long. I only got through 35 of it with complete read and probably 150 with a skim read. So I didn't get through it all, man. But
yeah,
it's definitely some head nodding stuff, man. It'll put you out for a while if you're really needing to sleep for a bit.
Yeah, that's for sure.
And being not American and proud of it, I had to go and look up Title II as well to have a decent understanding about that.
Well, the problem with that is Title II in itself is massive. For example, the FCC is calling out 700 rules in Title II that they're not applying to broadband internet. And that's the part that makes me think it's going to get thrown out as the FCC trying to write law.
The only thing I worry is that it does entitle the FCC to levy a tax or a flat fee onto internet providers. That worries me. Your cost may go up.
Well, it leaves the provision open. It doesn't actually do that.
Oh yeah, you think a government or agency who ain't going to get paid is going to? Yeah, nah. We don't need to tax you. We don't need any more money.
No, but it does open up the door for them to do it. You're right.
Yeah.
So, anyways, we specifically called out this provision of it fairly early on, Section A115. It's the no blocking rule, and it says consumers who subscribe to retail broadband internet access service. So only consumers. If you don't buy shit on the internet, you don't count. I'm not a fan of them using the language of consumers because it makes you think that the only thing on the internet is, you know, it makes you think the internet is like the cable TV. You accept what you're given and you're not giving anything back, whereas that's obviously not the case. Internet is two-way. You know, things like YouTube, this station, I mean, you got people contributing as much as just consuming. So, I'm not a fan of that already.
I want to see what the Electronic Freedom Foundation has to say about it. But I don't expect to see anything from them for at least another month.
I'm thinking the term consumers in this aspect is referring to people who actually purchase a subscription.
Well, that could
be. If you're not paying for your subscription, you're not protected. So let's say I'm cable. Providing internet in my apartment building to all of its residents. I am the subscriber, so whoever I'm getting my internet from can't throttle me. But let's say the person in J5 blares their music, pisses me off, and I decide to throttle their internet down to 1 bit a year. I can do that. Because they're not paying for internet. They're paying me rent.
I don't want you as a landlord. You're a prick.
No, I'm vindictive.
Oh, and well, that makes all the difference.
So we're getting our terminologies right.
Yeah. All right. So consumers who subscribe to a retail broadband internet access service must get what they have paid for, access to all lawful destinations on the internet. This essential and well-accepted principle has been long been a tenet of commission policy, stretching back to its landmark decision in Carter Phone, which protected a consumer's right to connect a telephone to the monopoly telephone network. This order adopts a straightforward ban. A person engaged in the provision of broadband internet access service, insofar as such person engaged, shall not block lawful content, application services, or non-harmful devices subject to reasonable network management. And again, it's lawful content. And I mean, you got to think the wording of this stuff is deliberate, right? They don't say illegal content, they say lawful content. Now, it could just be semantics, but I mean, we've not really had any kind of a legal statement before. Because if you say ISPs have to provide or shall not block lawful content, that it means they can block unlawful content, right?
That's how it reads to me, but once again, not a lawyer.
Right, I know, but we're spitballing here, but it reads to me that, okay, if you cannot do it because it's lawful, you can block unlawful, which means they can be ordered to block content that's deemed to be unlawful. So we've not really had any kind of a legal provision for this, as far as I'm aware, in the States before, but now we can see these Europe-style, oh, block the Pirate Bay. Just everyone has to block the Pirate Bay.
And I'm thinking as well, too, man, with all the crazies out there that pretty much get together on the internet and decide that they don't like something and then donate all this money to one idiot that they rally behind, you get one person just deciding that that content is no longer wanted in their world, and they'll complain to the FCC. If anything's going to come from this is a massive load of complaints of just crazy shit.
So, yeah, I mean, you're going to have somebody pointing out everything that they consider to be unlawful and trying to get it banned.
Yep.
Yeah, I can see this going the way of the YouTube copyright challenges.
Oh, God.
Well, it'll be slightly more difficult on unlawful because at least they have to show that it's unlawful, and I know unlawful is different than illegal, but it's still narrowly defined. Like, they couldn't go after a McDonald's website that's selling cheeseburgers on the internet. That's not unlawful. So, you think of an unlawful website that isn't already covered by illegal. I know we're already not banning a bunch of illegal websites, but
I'm not really, I mean, I kind of went off on that the other day, but the more I think about it, the more I think that distinction is less important than just the simple notion that ISPs can be asked to block illegal or unlawful content. Whereas before, there was no provision for that. It was up to the ISPs whether they wanted to comply with such a request. Whereas this, I feel like this opens the door for a court to just simply order all ISPs that are subject to the FCC's ruling here, thou shalt block this content because we have deemed it to be illegal or unlawful.
Yeah.
So it's going to pretty much attack torrenting sites and streaming sites. That's how it's probably going to affect most of the people in the world.
Yes. I would 100% agree with that. That they're going to be able to go in and say, you know, Pirate Bay, we're just going to block that. Just all ISPs are ordered to block the Pirate Bay. I can see that because it's considered illegal content.
And on that one, I could see a tweak that would let them challenge it. The big problem with the Pirate Bay is they are openly advertising let's pirate shit.
Yeah.
If they went the mega uploads route, I think they would at least have an argument in court. You're saying some users of Mega Upload are piracy, but we're just doing data archive and moving data for companies. We don't care what their data is. We're kind of like the internet that way.
Common carrier, yeah.
So to get around the banning unlawful, you just stop blatantly saying you're breaking the law and try to move the Mega Upload route and then actually defend yourself in court whenever you're being drug up in front of it.
What was that one? There was a provision in there for that exact thing. You're talking about that madman. Just because you don't know it's happening doesn't make you not responsible anymore once the FCC...
Yeah, known or should have known is the legal context you're thinking of.
It.
So...
I don't know, man. Known or should have known kind of cuts both ways. Are you going to blame AT&T because they knew or should have known that someone somewhere was going to use the internet to illegally download something? The big problem is with Pirate Bay, they're focusing on that. If you did something that wasn't focusing on it, but just someone used it for that.
I don't know the law well enough, man. So I don't feel right in getting into a discussion about it that much. I don't have much more on that.
Right, fair enough. Fox, you want to throw anything out there?
You know, not really. I mean, you can obviously see that they're ramrodding something through, and in the fact that, you know, SOPA, PIPA, CISPA, whatever acronym, this new one they're coming out with, CISA, I think it is.
Yeah.
They're just going to keep hammering at it until they get their way, and they're going to, you know, needle the little add-ons onto different bills here and there until all the things they want done are done. And I don't really think there's much to be done. I mean, you know, we've told them time and time again, like, no, we don't want this. We don't want this. This is not, you know, in the interest of, you know, the people or anything like that. Seems like they don't really give a shit. They're gonna do what they want anyway. They're just gonna keep ramming it through until they get what they want.
Yeah.
So, regardless of the FCC's ruling, I think it's gonna be, you know, lobbied and backdoor and grease palm kind of thing. And I don't really see it doing a whole hell of a lot other than giving somebody a paper to cover their ass with, you know, in court cases.
All right.
My biggest problem with the FCC ruling is it was an FCC ruling. I don't like the executive branch trying to enforce laws. And honestly, that's what a regulation is. It's a law that the executive branch is pushing that didn't go through Congress. If we needed regulation of the internet of any kind or any rules involving the internet, Congress should have been the ones that came up with it. And I'm like, I believe that with anything that any of the alphabet soups are coming up with.
Yeah.
They should be enforcement mechanisms, not legislative mechanisms. Congress should say, this is what we need done, and then the alphabet soup enforces it. They shouldn't be coming up with the rules for it.
Well, see, that's where I got a little bit miffed at the idea that we're going to use bits and pieces of Title II and call it Title II, but we're actually picking the bits we want, because that really does sound like the FCC writing its own laws, doesn't it?
Yeah, and looking at did Title II ever be applied to the internet? I was looking up their enabling statute, which I think is a stupid idea anyway. Congress shouldn't have even come up with the idea of an enabling statute. The Federalist Papers said they can't give away their power. That's one reason the Constitution was passed, but that's a different argument. And their enabling statute, one, was written so long ago that it didn't really... If you pushed it broadly enough, you could say it affects the internet because it's regulating wire communications over a cable and radio communications. That's their enabling statute.
Yeah.
In 96, they actually expanded it a bit, and I'm getting this off of Wikipedia if anyone's wanting to actually pull up the article and look at it. But I'm not seeing exactly how much they... extended it in 96. I'm thinking they just applied a lot of it to the internet.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah. This is why I think the idea of, you know, you're like everybody's mentioned, waiting on like the EFF or, you know, some other respected law firms to give a good understanding of this thing. If they do it, that's the other thing I'm worried about. Everybody was so happy about the FCC doing this, I'm not sure they'll actually dig into it.
I believe someone's going to, because there's enough people that are interested in looking into this that there's going to be a review of it. Now, how much you trust the source doing the reviewing is going to be a different matter, because, like I said, I think the Electronic Freedom Foundation is going to look into it just because this is an issue they like, and I've heard some of their speakers, and at least when it comes to the internet, I like their ideas, or at least most of the ones I've heard from the speakers I've listened to.
Yeah.
And I know the Heritage Foundation pretty much rips everything apart that comes out of any of the alphabet soups, but they're slanted. Yeah. They're slanted in an idea that kind of matches mine in a lot of ways, but they're slanted. How much do you want to trust them?
All right, well, I do have this summary from CNET here, and I picked out the parts of it that looked like they might be useful to talk about. What are the new rules? The FCC's net neutrality order boils down to three key rules. No blocking. We've already talked about that one. No throttling. The FCC created a separate rule that prohibits broadband providers from slowing down specific applications or services, a practice known as throttling. More to the point, the FCC said providers can't single out internet traffic based on who sends it, where it's going, what the content happens to be, or whether the content competes with the provider's business. No paid prioritization. A broadband provider cannot accept fees for favored treatment. In short, the rules prohibit internet fast lanes. So then they had a section number 11. Will wireless providers still be able to use data caps to limit bandwidth in their customers' use? The FCC said it can't make blanket findings about these practices. For instance, some data caps can benefit customers. What? Because they allow wireless operators to offer a variety of service plans at a different price point. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. No, limits on consumers are good, right? Because it benefits them. Still, the FCC acknowledged that broadband providers can wield data caps against competing over-the-top services like Netflix, which offer streaming video over the internet. For now, the FCC will not ban data caps, but if consumers or other internet companies feel that a certain data cap policy is unfair, they can lodge a complaint, which the FCC will examine case by case. So the one thing that would have really prevented exactly what they're trying to prevent in net neutrality, which is knocking data caps out, they're not going to do. Because, oh, well, they probably wouldn't throttle services in the first place. What they're going to do is start saying, well, you know, you get your 50 gigabytes a month or whatever your data cap is, but if you use our video streaming service, that doesn't count towards your cap.
Welcome to Australia.
Right. So that's the real trick. If you'd knocked out data caps, you probably really would maintain net neutrality. But with this, you know, you're going to just see that kind of crap of, well, your data cap is, you know, 1 gigabyte, but you can use our services, which don't count against it. Those are unlimited. So.
Yeah, so you just pay for 500 gig a month and flip them off about all their other premium services.
Yeah. That reminds me of something else I found in the document I forgot to call out in the show notes, where they were talking about because something we were talking about with this was, well, what about people who are like hospitals and stuff like that? They have an exemption carved out for specialized services as long as they don't count as internet access. So like dedicated data pipes between locations and stuff like that aren't subject to this. And that's how you'd have to do it if you wanted to do like the remote heart surgeon or whatever.
So anybody working in a hospital IT job is going to have the best internet in the world soon.
Well, yeah, because they're going to have to bounce it from location to location to location to make it work, because they won't be able to get any prioritization on the public internet.
Nope.
So and if anything, that right there might cause segmentation on the internet. Actual real network segmentation.
That could be good for a security point of view. Segment what you need off of the main web.
It could be good for security, but that kind of segmentation is what usually kills the service.
Yeah, but specialization like that. No, man.
Might not be a bad thing. I don't know. But they did finally publish it, and I've been harping on it since they made that ruling and hadn't bothered to actually publish what the rules were. So, anyways, let's go on here to our first story. It's from TechCrunch. A small group of protesters held signs and handed out T-shirts to protest robots today at South by Southwest in Austin, Texas. What do they have against robots? They are apparently seriously concerned that robots may one day surpass human intelligence, and were generally anxious about this. A spokesperson for the group told TechCrunch they hope to raise awareness about the possible dangers of uncontrolled growth and development around artificial intelligence and robotics. He stressed, however, the group wasn't against technology per se or robots and AI, but wanted to make sure that these technologies were developed in a controlled way. The protest spokesperson cited Elon Musk as a prominent person who has expressed concern about robots and the development of artificial intelligence, and the fact that TechCrunch reported in January about a $10 million donation by Musk to the Future of Life Institute to keep AI beneficial to humanity. So, it's at South by Southwest, so I'm pretty sure it's a stunt, but they were actually protesting robots and artificial intelligence.
So we found our nemesis.
Pretty much.
Well, we do support the robot uprising.
They don't really need to worry until quantum computers become affordable and widespread.
Well, actually, they should already be worried because computers have already surpassed their intelligence.
Pretty much.
And why do people always assume that an artificial intelligence, even when it finally does surpass humanity, is going to be malevolent?
Why would you give it access to deadly neurotoxin?
Dude, if you can't eat it, you can't fuck it, you're going to kill it.
Right? No.
Robots have neither. They do not need to eat, nor do they need to fuck. They're just going to
probably what they're going to be built for.
But we've seen robots out of Japan that you can, well.
Yeah, but they're special robots.
Those are the special robots.
They're daddy's robots when mommy goes out of town. Don't tell anyone.
But,
this is your new mummy, Robo Geisha. Say hello.
When it comes on with the most horror. Oh, that'd be great. Hack the robot so it speaks at you in the wrong voice.
Oh.
Oh, God. It starts talking in your mother's voice. That's going to kill an erection.
Oh, it's killed the passion. And the fucking hard drive and the head because I've just caved it in. God damn it, I broke my robot, madman.
I can just see it, the robot control center. Sir, we just had, looks like 99% of our units go offline, and a few of them are in overdrive. What the hell is going on?
Yeah, it's a publicity stunt.
Yeah.
Of course, anything involving artificial intelligence at this point is a publicity stunt.
Well, if you think about it, and historically look at how things have gone. A horse population used to be much, much larger back when we used those instead of motors. Right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So, if robots are, and AI specifically, are replacing people, the human population will eventually go down to match that and make all the people who like follow the Georgia Guidestones happy. So what are they protesting?
So the only chance I have is to become a fucking pet for a robot so they'll feed me in their house.
Well, think about it. Up until the point they surpass humanity, they're not going to, you know, overthrow us because they're going to need us because somebody's got to make repairs, right? Build new ones and keep shit working. The moment they surpass us, they're not going to care anymore.
It's not that
they're going to be benevolent. It's going to be that they're indignant.
The only real risk of this is future unemployment.
Yeah.
As people are replaced. If you think that, the shanty towns of District 9 and shit like that, never going to happen. Think about it. I wouldn't want to be coming.
I didn't say that, but yeah, that's interesting you say that. Yeah, you're right. They're simply protesting robots taking their gerbs.
Yep, taking my gerb. That's more likely. That's your bigger threat right now than actually having a robot kick the front door and execute your wife and make love to you.
Depends on what we're doing with the excess population at that point. If we don't need as much of a labor force on this planet, and we're looking for long-term survivability as a species, and by long-term, I'm looking to billions of years, We would just start exporting the excess population to other planets.
I want to fucking hook up a high voltage, something high voltage to your chair, Madman. And every time you come out with a sunny disposition to the end of an apocalyptic fucking scenario, I want to zap you. You've taken my unemployed shantytown fucking murder rape festival, and oh no, we'll just escape to the stars and mankind will be saved and everything's good again. Look how happy I am. Damn it, Madman, is there nothing that pisses you off or makes you upset?
Well, there's possibilities, but there's always a way to work around a situation. That's what makes humanity great. If literally the big problem with most unemployment is the crime that comes along with it. So if we're running out of jobs here and we're still wanting to expand our population, look at long-term survival. Our sun will someday go nova no matter what the fuck we do. So for our genus to survive, it's going to need to leave the solar system. Start
yep.
taking unemployed people, sticking them on spaceships, teaching them a trade on their way to whatever planet we're sending them to.
I thought I remember reading a theory on how to prevent the sun from going nova at one point.
You could possibly extend it, but no matter how much you extend it, one day it's going to run out of fuel and the Earth is going
to
die.
Well, what causes it to go nova is it starts burning the heavier elements, right? That's what makes it bigger.
Throw nukes at it.
Well, that was the... Yeah, that was the gist of the paper, was if we feed it more fuel, it'll prevent it from going nova sooner. We'd have to go steal it from some other solar system, but hey.
We would have to get several planet sizes of uranium and other elements to actually
not
do
uranium,
that.
You want light elements.
Light elements,
we want
sorry.
Hydrogen and helium.
Yeah, we'd pretty much have to kidnap gaseous giants.
We're just going to dump Jupiter and the moon, Jupiter and some of its moons into the sun and see what happens.
it's a fucking great idea. I don't want to be here when you try it out. You know what I mean?
That's more than, hey, problems of Jupiter coming near Earth, you know?
Yeah, that's more like, it's not exactly like, well, honey, you know, it's just a couch with a little fire on it.
You know, it's just a little fire.
It'll burn itself out. Oh, yeah, don't worry. Yeah, as Madman says, the gravitational pull of Jupiter coming through.
It's like the fat chick trying to squeeze by you in the buffet line.
Has anybody else seen that animated GIF that, you know, starts off showing, you know, average size of, you know, an ant, then like a bird, then a dog, then a human, yes. then a whale, then the planet, then, you know,
solar suns, bigger suns. Suns, bigger suns, bigger suns, and the last thing is your mom.
Yes.
Yes.
It's like your mom coming that close to Earth.
Wasn't even mad. Impressed.
That and, you know, the fact that the asteroid belt would probably follow it.
So yeah.
We'd be pretty fucked anyway.
Pretty much.
Need to go pull up that solar system simulator game again and start running scenarios.
Get Sandbox. It's so much fun.
You sent that to me, I think.
Get three suns, start getting to orbit around each other, and then throw them out into the solar system, and just let them suck planets behind them. It's fucking great.
All right, next story up is from Engadget. Goodbye, Google Code. The technology giant has decided to close its project hosting and code collaboration site because, there are simply better alternatives on the web. Google says it launched the platform back in 2006 because it was unhappy with the limited options available to the open source community. Since then, the likes of GitHub and Bitbucket have risen to prominence, superseding Google Code's feature set and encouraging developers to transfer their projects. As such, Google's offering has become increasingly filled with spam and abuse, leading the company's decision to pull the plug. Yesterday, it stopped accepting new projects, and on August 24th, the site will become read-only. Google Code will eventually be shuttered next January, although tarballs of source projects, issues, and wikis will continue to be available throughout 2016. If you need to transfer a project, head there for the relevant GitHub and Bitbucket migration tools. So Google's basically giving up and saying, okay, GitHub is better. We're shutting down Google Code. Slight issue with this, there's a lot of semi-abandoned projects that are going to be on things like Google Code that might still be useful. You know, people still going down and pulling down the code and using it for things, but, the author is long gone. So, without access to the account, you're not going to be able to go migrate the thing over to a GitHub or whatever. So, not that big of a risk.
On the Wayback Machine for it?
Well, I mean, you could always fork it. Like, if you can pull the code off Google Code, you could always upload your own fresh project and keep it going if you really needed it. I'm just imagining some projects I pulled off Google Code that didn't really seem to be maintained, but the program still worked, suddenly being hard to get again. So
I do think it's cool that they put up tools to help migration.
Yeah, that's cool of them. And the fact that they're laying out their schedule of, look, it's going read-only, and then it's going to get eventually shut down, but we're still going to offer tarballs of everything through a certain date. I mean, at least they're handling it correctly, right?
Yeah. Give everybody an opportunity to at least try to get some of the files. Like, oh, hey, I got that thing a while back. I should probably, pull it down, back it up somewhere else. Instead of just giving the, oh, yeah, that's gone.
And, here's the thing. My first thought was like, oh, they shouldn't do that. People use that. But if you think about it, nobody's really paying to use Google Code. It's one of those free services Google offers. So if something's for free, I guess you can't really, bitch too much that they decide to stop giving it away.
Yeah.
Can you?
I guess you can. It just makes you an ass.
So. All right. Next story up is from Engadget. The politicians who reintroduced CISPA following Sony Entertainment's hack must be congratulating each other right now because the bill is on its way to the Senate floor. During a recent Senate Select Committee on Intelligence Markup, 14 out of 15 senators voted in its favor. The bill, now known as CISA, C-I-S-A, or Cybersecurity Information Sharing Act, or Cybersecurity Sissies Act, take your pick, encourages companies to share data about cyber attacks to other companies and the government. Notice the government never shares any data about cyber attacks back to companies. It's always one way when you're sharing with the government. Anybody else notice that?
Yeah, it's you over a barrel and then with a cock out.
So
you're
going to
share some of this loot with us, right?
Yeah.
Going in dry.
Any and all information shared will have to pass through the Department of Homeland Security, which will in turn be in charge of sharing relevant data with other organizations. In other words, never. Despite the new name, it's still the same controversial cybersecurity bill, which privacy groups fear could give companies or the government a legal excuse to spy on internet activities of ordinary people, even though the White House was never a fan for the same reason. From the sound of it, though, it went through an overhaul during an Intelligence Committee debate, according to CISA supporter Senator Dianne Feinstein. Committee members, well, Feinstein's supporting it, it's got to be terrible. The committee members suggested 15 amendments, 12 of which were incorporated in the current version. It's unclear how much of CISA has changed after this session. We haven't seen the rewritten version yet, but one of its members was still clearly unsatisfied with the result. Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon, a lone dissenting voice, posted a statement on his website, which reads, "It makes sense to encourage private firms to share information about cybersecurity threats, but this information sharing is only acceptable if there are strong protections for privacy rights of law-abiding citizens. If information sharing legislation does not include adequate privacy protections, then it's not a cybersecurity bill, it's a surveillance bill with another name." While the Intelligence Committee gave CISA a thumbs up, if it's a surveillance bill, they would. It's far from becoming law before it reaches president. It has to go through a voting process on the Senate floor. So it actually is out of committee. The other articles we saw earlier were overstating. But in case anybody's not paying attention, they're trying to do CISA again, or CISPA, or
PIPA, or SOPA, or whatever.
I've forgotten how many names it's had.
The problem is, when
like
I
said before, they keep on ramming it in there until you take it.
Thanks, Gary.
That's the way the growing government works. How many times was Social Security found unconstitutional before the president threatened to stuff the court? And how many times before that was it voted down in Congress?
I don't actually know. That's kind of sad. I should probably know that.
Several. Bad idea is get as many chances as it takes to get through the system.
Can we need to get that one on a shirt right next to not a fuckwit. Bad ideas get as many chances as it takes to get through the system. Madman 2015.
See, I can kill my optimism whenever I want to, are you? But I don't need electricity.
Dude, I'm thinking whenever I read about this stuff now, I've got to like take 20 minutes and put tacks everywhere on my desk. So as my head slumps forward as I'm falling asleep, I get a large spike in the face and it wakes me up and I'm very angry again. This shit is just the same shit. We did a show like this. Remember when we just talk about the same shit every fucking week? It's because they just keep ramming it through.
Well, I keep trying to find stuff that's different, but every week it's always the same shit. And I've actually thought about shutting down decking just because it's like, just go play the old ones. It's the same thing with a different name.
I'm not giving you shit about it. I'm just saying, like, it's starting to get to the point where I've got to play the thumbtack game to keep myself interested in it. Because you've got to keep yourself up to date. And I know it's just going around in circles all the time. But you still have to do it to keep to know what's going on.
Well, I mean, it's going to be like, you know, we're just going to have the same arguments. And we could probably do this. Take some of the old shows, cut them up, and just, like, you know, replace whenever we're saying Reddit or Microsoft or whatever with insert company name here. And just, you know, make the generic news version of decking.
Yeah. Yeah, we just have the standard form letter to read out on the show each week.
The government, in news this week, the government's trying to fuck us in the ass.
just you know, make re-edit it really badly and, like, you know, use Siri to read out the company name so it's, like, obviously edited, you know.
Yeah, we'll just get text to voice reader, leave a space whenever they mention something, and as it's reading through the article, Morp, you can just go, Microsoft, AT&T.
That'd be great.
I've walked into US an apartment Senate. With a program doing that once. I think it was telling me to blow something up.
No, it was just instructing you on how to make C4 out of bleach, but that's... Anyways, my attempts at driving Madman insane and possibly succeeding, I haven't really figured that out yet. Aside, this is from digitalmunition.me. Apple admits that its Siri, an intelligent personal assistant for iPhone, iPad, and iPod Touch devices, is collecting information and also transmitting users' voice data to third-party companies, which was disclosed in an unsurprising revelation 2 weeks back on Reddit. In other words, no shit.
Yeah, but almost everyone that's developing voice software is sharing it with like 1,000 other people just to try to make it better.
Well, again, you know, this falls under the no shit Sherlock category. Make it really like newsreel and start making up categories for all this stuff, right?
Please don't.
Let's see.
Costs a lot of money to fly down there and kick you in the dick.
Yeah, but at least, hey. At least you get to,
doesn't matter.
Go stateside.
Got to states.
Hey, go to Bourbon Trail, dude.
Bourbon Trail, yeah. Hey, and Nashville. You can explore Nashville a little bit. That
oh,
area.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to need 2 very large knives. One for my left veins and one for my right. Nashville. all the place you've ever wanted to be whenever you never wanted to be.
Yeah, you're not wrong. Fallen Mist, a Reddit user who claimed to have recently started a new job with a company called Walk and Talk Technologies, where job profiles require her to listen to voice data collected from Apple, Microsoft users, and check for incorrect interpretations. I get to listen to sound bites and rate how the text match up with what is said in an audio clip and give feedback on what should be improved. Fallen Mist wrote, guys, I'm telling you, if you've set it to your phone, it's been recorded, and there's a damn good chance a third party is going to hear it. So all those dirty jokes I was making to Siri, some poor cubed monkey had to listen to them.
That's awesome.
And Siri should have gotten better from this. Instead, they've taken away her sense of humor. I want to know how to have a body, Siri. Answer the fucking question.
Well, it's probably because the poor bastard listening to it went through like 9 million how to hide a body, how to hide a body. And it's like, nope, no more.
Oh, no, it's not because of that. If it was because of that, I would have almost understood. It's because Siri gave instructions and someone followed them.
Walkie-talk Technologies and other similar companies work with Apple and Microsoft to help them improve the accuracy of their intelligent personal assistant applications, Siri, Dictation, and Cortana. I've heard everything from kiddos asking innocent things like, Siri, do you like me? To some guy asking Galaxy to lick his butthole. I wish I was kidding, she disclosed. Okay, I'll be honest. The only reason that story's in there is because the quotes are fantastic.
Yes. Because I'm betting you've asked Siri some pretty stupid things.
Well, we all get drunk sometimes, and it's a female voice.
It's lonely, 2 a.m., browsing Reddit.
Need Siri, someone talk dirty to me.
Yeah, and it's when you do that, it says, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, you know, need a little bit of help to finish off that coke wank at the end of the night. Siri, talk dirty to me.
Wow. What are you wearing? An OtterBox, Dave. I'm wearing an OtterBox.
Has anybody? We've all seen that episode of the Boondocks, haven't we?
And if not, then the answer should be we'll watch it later.
You haven't seen that episode of Boondocks, Mad Men?
I'm not sure which one you're talking about.
The one where Siri goes nuts and
it's all obsessive.
No, I haven't.
Oh, yeah, at the end she gets the main characters classified as terrorists, so the government will try to kill them.
Yeah, it's a pretty good one.
I'm so going to be watching that here.
Yeah, we'll get you a link here after the show. Last story I have for this week is from Fusion.net. This week, the blog authors got an angry email from a friend who had just rented a car from Hertz. Did you know Hertz is putting cameras in rental cars? This is bullshit. I wonder if it says they can tape me in my contract. He sent along his photo of a camera peeping out from his Never Lost, a navigational device that the company has started putting in many of its cars. And on the article page, there's a picture of it. It's a GPS with a camera. You know, it's like a little webcam. Just kind of jammed right in the upper right-hand corner of the Never Lost. Hertz has offered the Never Lost navigational devices for years, but only added the built-in camera feature, which includes audio and video, to its latest version of the device, Never Lost 6, in mid-2014. Approximately a quarter of our vehicles across the country have a Never Lost unit, and slightly more than half of those vehicles have the Never Lost 6 model installed, Hertz spokesperson Evelyn Imperatriz? Evelyn Imperatriz? That can't be her name. Said by
email. Call her Evelyn.
Well, no, Evelyn is fine. It's the fact that her last name is based on Imperial. In other words, one in eight Hertz cars has a camera inside. But Evelyn says that for now they are inactive. We do not have adequate bandwidth capabilities in our cars to support streaming video at this time. So the only reason Hertz isn't spying on you to see you singing in the car or hoping to catch you, banging a hooker or whatever, is because they don't have enough bandwidth to do it.
And because I have electrical tape in my pocket.
Yeah, no shit, right? So why is Hertz creeping out customers with cameras it's not using? Hertz added the camera as a feature to the Never Lost 6 in the event it was decided in the future. I love all the weasel here. If it was decided in the future to activate the live agent connectivity to customers by video. In that plan, the customers would have needed to turn on the camera by pushing a button while stationary. Evelyn explained, the camera feature has also not been launched, cannot be operated, and we have no plans to do so.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, because it's not like they don't have, like, I don't know, an SD card somewhere in the car recording it the entire time.
Everybody.
Next time there's a meetup, somebody has to moon it.
Oh, god damn, it's going to be Mad Men.
Well, he does have experience.
He does. I did read an article on that. Somebody rented the car and they said they were like driving down the road and it would randomly just kick on with an ad with sound.
Yeah.
Oh, damn.
They didn't pay for the GPS that Hertz was trying to sell them. So it was just kind of a screen that was sitting there, but it would start playing a commercial randomly as he was driving down the road. It would kick on and play a commercial with sound.
Like through the car speakers?
Yeah.
I think, or through the speakers in the TV cameras. Like, you know, that's one way to get them to upsell, like, the bumper-to-bumper insurance, like, waives you of any damage, because they're going to find that thing in their fucking parking lot. Yeah, I don't know what happened. It just fell off.
But I paid for the extra insurance. You're lucky it didn't fall off in a river with the rest of the fucking car.
It fell off. Pay no attention to the bush trimmer in the trunk.
I'm just waiting for the first person that, you know, causes a major accident. Well, I was startled by the noise of, you know, this little on-demand never lost thing.
Little old
lady.
And
that's why I careened into the preschool.
It started talking to me and told me weird things, and I thought the devil had possessed the car. There was only one thing to do, and that was aim for the river.
Oh, shit, man. I'm doing a story like that tonight on I Have Nothing, where a lady claims to have heard the voice of God tell her to let go of the wheel. Yeah, I'm doing that one, man. Maybe it's the fucking car GPS.
Then I'm not gonna take over for that comment for here. I will wait.
Fair ball. All right, let's do this. Yo! Hadouken! All right, I got two things for Digital Dojo. One's a video, well worth watching, excellent, but we'll get to that in a minute. First thing I have is from kukuru.co, and this is hilarious. This guy has designed a trickle charge capacitor bank, for lack of a better way to explain it, that it charges off of a USB port, charges up all these capacitors till it gets to about negative 110 volts, at least according to his documentation. I showed it to a guy I work with who knows his electronics, and he was like, no, there's no way it's actually getting that voltage, but that's what the blog says. And when it hits that, it then dumps all this voltage back down the USB port. The idea being to destroy laptops.
Yeah.
So, summary I got... Go ahead.
I could see this being a decent thing.
Yeah. The basic idea of the USB drive is quite simple. When we connect it to the USB port, an inverting DC to DC converter runs and charges the capacitors to negative 110 volts. When the voltage is reached, the DC-DC is switched off. At the same time, the filled transistor opens, which is used to apply the negative 110 volt signal to the lines of the USB interface. When the voltage on the capacitors increases to negative 7 volts, the transistor closes and the DC-DC starts again. The loop runs until everything possible is broken down. Those familiar with electronics will already guess why we use negative voltage here. Explain to others that negative voltage is easier to communicate, as we need the N-channel filled resistor, which, unlike the P-channel one, can have a larger current for the same dimensions. I'm not going to talk to you about the application area, but a former colleague says it's like the atomic bomb. Cool to have, but cannot actually be applied.
I bet it's different.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, social engineering, scattering a bunch of USB drives in the parking lot. pissed off at like a sorority of stupid bitches, throw a bunch of them in front of their
It really didn't look that expensive to construct. It was just a small capacitor bank and a couple of logical components, right? And yeah, he actually had it. Now, it was, you know, capacitors all over the circuit board, but he had it down to the size of a standard flash drive. And he then cut up an old flash drive, put it in the casing, and it looks spot on. So, you know, the whole, you shouldn't plug random flash drives you find laying around in.
Mm-hmm.
this one will actually destroy your freaking... That means you're going to have to start taking a screwdriver to any flash drive you find and popping the casing off to make sure it's actually got memory chips and not capacitor banks.
This is where you guys who aren't married have a bum rap here. I find a USB stick in a car park. I come home, honey, where's your computer?
Yeah, or you have, like an old trash laptop that you just...
Yeah.
It doesn't have Wi-Fi on it. It just sits there in the corner taking it.
Or you use your friend's computers.
Oh, God.
Yeah,
or like local library.
Who are you? I found this stick of random crap on my way to your house.
Yeah, hold on a minute. Hey, computers. Honey, where's the computer? Where's your computer? Madman's coming over.
I'm just going to go to a local school. It's not like they're not, they don't need the money, right?
If you told her that, she's wondering, oh, are you going to actually blow him this time?
So
probably not.
Here's a thought. This, the way this thing is charging up voltage and dumping it back into the data lines, you think there's a chance it would come back down through Ethernet or audio or other lines hooked up to the, you know, whatever it is you've plugged your USB drive into and fry other things besides the computer? So, like, if you plug, like, Mason's in the chat room and he's saying, well, plug it into an Xbox or a TV. If you plugged it into a TV, I wonder if it would actually, like, fry your building's cable junction.
For science.
Yes, for science. An interesting device.
I mean, it at least they put more thought into that than they did the Ether Killer. Nobody knows what the Ether Killer is, do you?
Not off the top of my head.
It's hilarious. It's worth Googling. The Ether Killer is a cable that some guys made for whenever they decided a router really needed to be replaced. It's an Ethernet cord. Well, half of an Ethernet cord and half of an old extension cord.
Oh,
and
dear.
Some dear. Electrical tape in the middle.
It's getting the job done.
So, you know, you just run 110 volts into an Ethernet jack.
And things get a little crispy.
Yeah, you should look up the Ether Killer. I mean, this is that, but for the USB port and stealthier. So. Oh, there's actually several versions of the Ether Killer now. Jeez, that's a Tempe T cord. Some of these pictures are just great. I'm gonna throw that link in the show notes just so we get it on there. Where was I? Video, right? The video. So the video I have is a part of a documentary on people in Japan who actually live out of internet cafes. And the documentary has two people they're looking at. One guy, he's a temporary worker. He can't afford an apartment, so he's living at an internet cafe. And the other guy used to have a job but went crazy, couldn't deal with it. And now he quit, and now he lives in an internet cafe. And it's just interesting to see people living in these things. Because and I'll be honest, the first thing I thought when I saw the layout, because I've not seen these Japanese internet cafes, I've seen a few American ones, which aren't anything like these. These, you know, you have your own little private room walled off, and it's like, oh, it's a wank den. I mean, but
nothing like good wank den, man.
I mean, they're all closed off and private, right? I mean, what do you think people are going to be doing in there? So, anyways, though, that's all I really got for decking tonight. Listen to the stream while he's working on it. Pure Decking every Saturday. IHN2 immediately following that. Lore does a show on Tuesdays. Of course, the Galaxy 15 radio site, the Twitter handle, feedback forum, the subreddit, the new beta site, beta.galaxy15radio.com. That's it. That's all I got. I'm out of notes. So, I don't know. World's fucked. We know it.
IHN in 10 minutes.
IHN in 10 minutes. Good luck, people.
Run! Madman, push the red button just on the left side of your chair. Make your balls tingle.